He's amused Cam Newton.
Just ask that question one more time.
He's been insulted by Charles Barkley.
When some idiot in the press asked him, if you know what you know now, what you have scheduled this game?
He's interviewed Matthew McConaughey.
I do say go Tarion.
And he's taken on Big Blue Nation.
He's just completely taken the wind out of my sails.
It's time for The Drive with Josh Graham.
Welcome to a Wednesday Drive, WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad. Where now that both NC State and North Carolina are through with early week action the last couple of nights, we're all setting our sights on what should be the spiciest, most significant State-Carolina game in recent memory. That's going to be a Sunday game, not a Saturday game. They've got a lot going on in Raleigh Saturday night across the parking lot. The Carolina Hurricane. Yeah, the outdoor game is Saturday night across the parking lot at Carter Finley. And then Sunday, North Carolina is heading into PNC Arena to face NC State. It's one of the greatest sports weekends that the Capital City has had in a very long time. So we're all looking forward to that. But focusing on the basketball, both teams are coming in off losses, which heightens the stakes for this game. If you thought Kevin Keats was on edge in the handshake lines with Jim Boeheim last night, just get ready for what it's going to look like when he brings out the red blazer, I'm sure, and sees the guys in light blue on the other side. It's going to be fun. By the way, handshake talk, a lot more fun than officiating talk. I'm down to talk handshakes if you want to. 336-777-1600. Even though those things are probably linked, that's what it seemed like Kevin Keats was talking about with Jim Boeheim. In fact, he confirmed so after the game. But coming off the losses, both teams should be at their best. They should be sharp. Each team is getting 5-6 days of rest and prep to get ready for this. It's a high-level basketball game we're expecting on Sunday, and there will be genuine disgust and anger in the air. A couple weeks ago, when I was at Duke, Carolina, that was the loudest, nastiest, and drunkest I've ever heard that building. There was legitimate anger from Duke fans. Legitimate hate, disgust towards the visiting team, given what happened in the Final Four last year. You could feel it. It was palpable. Cameron's a small building. 8,000-9,000 people. PNC Arena holds close to 20,000. And it sold out. And NC State fans can be crotchety at times.
We suck.
We've come to learn with the history and the Baby T incident last time when they played. And Armando Bacot wearing the glasses after the game. It's going to be a spectacle. There's going to be legitimate anger, disgust when State plays Carolina, which isn't usually something that we like promoting, but in sports, we kind of like it, don't we? Yeah. It's okay to admit that you pay close attention when the crashes happen and the fights happen in sports. We like it when there are real rivalries and there's real dislike, real angst, real anger. And the game's unquestionably more important to the visitors. When's the last time you could say that? NC State is facing North Carolina, and it is NC State that is comfortably in the tournament and North Carolina that's having to get this win in order to get on the plus side of the bracket. Joey Brackets put out his update today. And North Carolina is right there as one of the last four teams into the NCAA tournament. They do not have a quad one win. So there's no doubt that North Carolina is the one that needs this win more. That adds to the intrigue of it. So the stage is set. I've been watching this rivalry and been watching college basketball in this state my entire life. And in the last 10 to 15 years, 20 years, I don't remember a game quite like this one between these two teams. If you could think of an example, feel free to throw it at me, 336-777-1600. But that's why I am intrigued for it and can't wait for it to arrive. Will Dalton is the executive producer of the show. He's wearing a Star Wars hoodie today. Is it just because you always wear Star Wars stuff, or are you wearing it today specifically because you know I need to watch one of these Star Wars movies later tonight?
No, I'm wearing this because I was wearing it at the house today before I left, and I needed to get out the door. This is my favorite. It's comfortable. So I said, that's what we're wearing today.
How many Star Wars hoodies do you own?
Honestly, hoodies, only two. But I have a few other sweatshirts. Like, I got a Christmas Stormtrooper sweatshirt that's not a hoodie. So that's in the mix.
What Star Wars movie am I watching again? The Last Jedi?
The Last Jedi.
One of the newer Star Wars. So
yep.
I'll give that a look a little later. If you want to see WD's Star Wars hoodie, you can see that on YouTube, Twitch, and on Twitter. That's where we're streaming. You can also chime in on the show at WSJS Radio on Twitter, however, wherever you are listening and watching. We appreciate that. When it comes to the Carolina Panthers and Derek Carr, who was released by the Raiders yesterday, it's important to always be gathering new information. And when you gather new information, be open to all options. Be willing to change or deviate the original plan. Deviate from the original plan. It's the way of the stubborn man to stay entrenched on an opinion and unwilling to move off of it. And when you work in the opinion business, like WD and I do, you deal with people all the time who say, well, a few years ago, you said this. Didn't you say this? Oh, you're a flip-flopper. So even at the risk of changing my tune from even just a few weeks ago on Derek Carr being a Panther, which we were not a fan of at first, I really do think him being a free agent, rather than having to trade for him, completely changes the conversation. He's now a player the Panthers absolutely should be strongly considering, and based on Adam Schefter's reporting, it seems that they are. It doesn't require a trade anymore to bring him in, which doesn't rule out the possibility of you still drafting a quarterback if one should fall to you at number 9 in the draft. I still believe to this day, the Panthers never admitted this. They probably never will. We'll probably never know for sure whether or not this was the case. I still believe the Carolina Panthers draft Justin Fields number 8 if they did not trade for Sam Darnold. In other words, if Darnold were picked up as a free agent, rather than Carolina having to trade a second round pick and I think a fourth round pick in order to bring him in, I think Carolina pulls the trigger. I don't think they thought Justin Fields would be available there at number 8. So if you were to sign Derek Carr hypothetically and CJ Stroud fell to you at number 9, well, you could draft Stroud and Derek Carr will still have trade value. You can get something in exchange for Derek Carr. Find someone who's willing to take on that contract. Derek Carr, then there's this idea of, oh, it's another retread quarterback. Oh, the Panthers have been through this how many times? Derek Carr is markedly better than Sam Darnold and Teddy Bridgewater and Baker Mayfield when you look at the stats. Carr has earned second and third contracts in the NFL. None of those other quarterbacks really have. Carr was a Pro Bowler, checks watch, last year. And in December, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think his passing percentage, or his completion percentage, excuse me, in the fourth quarter of games just in December was around 75%. He also now has Frank Reich as his coach and likely play caller. A little bit different than Matt Rhule and Ben McAdoo. All respect to our guy.
That's true. Well played.
All due respect. We still miss him with every passing day. It just doesn't look like Carolina is going to be able to get the quarterback that they want. Another mock draft was put out today by Todd McShay, We heard Jim Irsay salivating at the idea of trading up to take the Alabama quarterback, Bryce Young. We know that they're going to want to get a quarterback. They're at number four. And we know the Texans are going to want to take a quarterback at number two. So when you look at this mock draft, the Colts trade up to number one and take Young. Stroud's gone with the second pick. The Raiders are still looking for a quarterback. Now that Derek Carr isn't there, they're in front of you. I'm sorry. I'm not game for drafting a project in Anthony Richardson. And you really have to start asking the question, if you have to get to the number one pick or even the number three pick in order to get one of these rookies that you like, is that a better option right now than not having to trade anything at all for a Pro Bowl quarterback in Derek Carr? Especially when you have upgraded on your staff with a coach that's ready to win right now in Frank Reich, who coached last year and has a winning record, a defensive coordinator that interviewed for head coaching jobs in Ejiro Evero, and a roster that nearly made the playoffs towards the end of last year that wasn't even supposed to be winning games. In a division that there's no certainty in, Carolina's probably going to be the favorite to win regardless of what happens. You can make that argument. And you drafted Matt Corral last year. So you got your backup quarterback. Derek Carr can be your starter. And if one of those quarterbacks should fall to you at number nine, magically, the way that Ike Ekwonu fell to you at number six last year, well, then nothing's preventing you from taking that guy because it's not requiring you to ship off draft capital in order to take a quarterback, which makes it different than a lot of those other circumstances, along with the fact that Carr, again, is better in almost every single way than those other quarterbacks that Carolina's brought in.
It's the Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
The author of the story at The Athletic, which ACC basketball team will win the league and who should be all ACC, is Brendan Marks. He joins the show now. And in regards to the best players in ACC basketball right now, the two guys who got unanimous selections for all ACC were Ty Appleby from Wake, Armando Bacot from North Carolina, and pretty close to unanimous, it's okay, WD. Brendan Marks is familiar with our proceedings here. Tre'Quavion Smith, pretty close to unanimous as well. Those were the top vote getters. And it reminded me that last year, only three players got votes for Player of the Year. It was Alondis Williams, who ended up winning the award here in the state of North Carolina, of course, at Wake. Armando Bacot finished second in that voting. And then it was Paolo Banchero from Duke. So the three best players were here in the state of North Carolina, and it looks like that might be the case again in 2023. Brendan, how much wider is the pool of players who you could see winning Player of the Year beyond those three guys I mentioned, Ty Appleby, Tre'Quavion Smith, and Mr. Bacot?
I think that those are the three front runners for sure. But are there more contenders? I would say, yeah. You know, I think that if Pitt, you know, is able to come from being a 14th pick in the preseason poll and they're able to win the league, I think Jamarius Burton is going to get serious consideration. I think if Miami's able to steal it, I think that Isaiah Wong will get consideration. And, you know, reflected in that depth of candidates for Player of the Year, I think just shows you how deep the pool is for all ACC. I mean, you could reasonably list probably 10, 11, 12 guys who merit consideration there. So it's very different from last year, that's for sure.
Because the piece that you noted there might be the most fascinating part of this. Yeah, the three best players might be from the state of North Carolina, but as of right now, none of those guys are going to be playing for teams with a double bye in the ACC tournament. That's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. Greensboro's got to be, you know, smiling the biggest smile in the world right now. Their dream is still alive, you know, that all four North Carolina teams will be playing on Wednesday in four separate games. I will say, I thought that NC State had a really good chance at sneaking into that double bye. I don't think it's impossible still, but obviously a loss to Syracuse kind of puts a little bit of a damper on that.
Yeah, and Clemson's next two games are against Florida State and Louisville. They are 10-4. Right now in that four spot, NC State has the same number of wins, but two more losses at 10-6, and their schedule is about to get really hard, even though they do have many of those difficult games on their home floor. It is another NC State loss last night. You mentioned Jamarius Burton. If Pittsburgh's able to win the league, one of those guys you have to consider for all ACC. How close of a lock would you say Jeff Capel is for being coach of the year?
That's another interesting conversation. And I do think that whoever ends up winning the ACC, you know, it's going to be directly tied to whoever wins coach of the year, because I think obviously Capel is the front runner right now. But if you told me you wanted to vote for Kevin Keats, I would absolutely hear that argument. If you told me that you wanted to vote even for like a Brad Brownell, I would hear that argument. So I think that there are a couple of different ways this can go. Obviously, Capel is the front runner, but you know, I don't think this is one of those years where there are going to be a lot of calls for Tony Bennett to win it like there were with Coach K last year. I think we're going to stick to the conventional non-written rules of whoever improves the most beyond what they were expected to do.
I led the Coach K charge last year. Then I was told that I was just a sensationalist, hot take guy. Everybody, I mean, come on, you're in Winston-Salem. Who could think other than Steve Forbes somebody else should win it? And then Steve Forbes came on the show and said, yeah, I voted for Coach K. He probably should have won the award. Is Tony Bennett in that division now of coaches that are too good for Coach of the Year, since Coach K might be the best coach in the history of college basketball, but never voted the best coach in the ACC the final 22 years he coached?
Yeah, I don't know that Tony is necessarily there yet, but I do think with the roster that he was coming into this year with, and based on the returning experience, I thought it was always going to be a long shot. Like, Virginia was picked, I think, third in the preseason, and you reasonably could have made the argument that they should have been first. So, again, it's all about how you interpret the rule. It's about how you interpret what the award is meant to be. Is it for biggest overachiever? If it's actually for the best coach, then it probably should be Tony Bennett, because he has the only team in the ACC that, for my money, probably has a real national championship, you know, aspiration. I think Miami's a really good team, but like in terms of who has the best team in the ACC, it's Tony Bennett. So does that make him the best coach? I don't know. I think folks tend to go with the overachiever when we're talking about coach of the year. And I don't think that's a bad thing. It gets some credit on guys who maybe otherwise wouldn't get it.
It's good to see Brendan Marks, who you can follow on Twitter at Brendan R. Marks. You can see him too on our video stream at WSJS Radio, YouTube, Twitch. We're at all those different places. Brendan covers North Carolina and Duke, but the ACC at large too, in a lot of contexts for The Athletic. Okay, getting to North Carolina, we've been taking phone calls. There's a few people that hit me up every time North Carolina loses, the anti-Hubert folks. We don't want to get to, you know, the extremes of any fan bases and talking about things, but this was a team that was preseason number one in the AP poll. So when the team underperforms the way that they are right now, again, they could still make the tournament. I venture to say they probably do make the tournament, but that's still underwhelming given where the expectations were going into the year. Who is primarily responsible for where North Carolina is right now?
I don't think it's Hubert Davis. And I think agree. That a lot of people think that it is. You know, the for me, I view a lot of the situation with Hubert Davis. I try to provide greater context, which, you know, shame on me for doing that. I look at a lot of things when I am talking about either Duke or North Carolina specifically, especially now, through a similar lens, because they're both going through similar things. New coaches, you know, but the situations that Hubert Davis and John Shire walked into were entirely different. Hubert Davis inherited this, you know, quote unquote, big three, this core of Caleb Love, RJ Davis, and Armando Bacot. Inherited Leaky Black as well. John Shire, on the other hand, inherited one guy. So, like, when I talk about Hubert and the blame there, like, it's not like he is the one who has built this roster. It's not that he's not the one who constructed this team that is struggling to shoot. He is not the one who, you know, is missing all of these shots. He's not the one who's, you know, on pace to post potentially the worst three-point shooting season of the year in program history. So I think that when you're talking about blame, a lot of it, I think, just falls on the players. Like, we can talk about development. We can talk about guys not making shots, any of that. The fact of the matter is North Carolina's not making shots right now. And if North Carolina's making shots, we're having an entirely different conversation about this team. If we are able to talk about a team that's making 33% of its threes, 35% of its threes, 36% of its threes, all of a sudden we're talking about a very different North Carolina team, and one that's probably a top 4 or 5 seed in the tournament. So to me, that's the biggest problem with North Carolina. And so I don't put the blame on the coach. I put the blame on the guys who aren't making those shots.
Yeah, I don't put blame on Hubert Davis or that guy. Yeah, I don't put blame on that guy either. So we started today's show NC State loses last night. There's all the drama with the handshake line and officiating that people want to talk about. North Carolina loses on Monday night. So Carolina fans are mad, State fans are mad, and they're all going to get together on Sunday, and the stage is set for just a really strange occurrence where State's the team that looks comfortable in the tournament and North Carolina's not, and they're going into that building. What angle to this game on Sunday most intrigues you?
Well, you know, from a logistical angle, I'm fascinated to know if PNC Arena is going to have enough alcohol to supply all of the NC State fans, especially after what's going to be happening there on Saturday night.
Is it going to be drunker and angrier than Cameron Indoor a couple of weeks ago?
Man, I don't know if it's the goal, but I think it's going to be the reality.
Because that was the drunkest and angriest I've ever heard, Cameron. I've been going there like you for years. So if it could exceed that, I might wear a helmet.
Yeah, I think in terms of the basketball perspective, this is, you know, I tend not to say that any one game can make or break a season in basketball. They're all just individual data points. But this is probably the most important game left on North Carolina's schedule. I think it's a more important game than Virginia at home. I think it's a more important game than Duke in the season finale. Obviously, we can't know what the games are going to be in the ACC tournament, but if North Carolina doesn't win this game against NC State, there is a very real possibility that it finishes the regular season without a quad one win. And that, as far as NCAA tournament picture looks, is like the worst possible thing that you can do. You are really relying on your laundry at that point to get you in. And if you're NC State, look, this has been a fun season. This has been a real fun season. You have that big win over Duke. You're probably going dancing. You've got Terquavion Smith. You just had a triple-double last night. DJ Burns has been a revelation. We'll see about Mihorčić. What could make this season sweeter than going ahead and putting sort of a final dagger in North Carolina's tournament hopes? So I think it'll be a really interesting game. If North Carolina doesn't come out desperate, I would be shocked. But I think that obviously this game is more important for North Carolina than it is for NC State, because at this point in the season, you look at that resume, and the irony of North Carolina's tournament resume right now is the only guaranteed or almost guaranteed NCAA tournament team that they've beaten is NC State. And so they need NC State to do well. So it's just a fascinating dynamic. And, you know, I'm expecting that there's going to be like a whirlwind of people who just stay at PNC overnight after the hockey game. And we'll see what the atmosphere looks like Sunday. It'll be crazy.
We need to get a Kona the dog update the next time I see you.
We can do that. If she was here, I would gladly, and against my will, prop her up into the camera. But I will have that on tap for next time.
Oh, that's what we call in the business a tease. Brendan Marks, good. Be vigilant, and good luck getting into the building on Sunday. I'll look forward to seeing you. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
There he goes. He's on Twitter at Brendan R. Marks. Read his story about the All-ACC teams at The Athletic. Really interesting stuff there from Brendan.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
It's the middle of the week. Hump day, as some call it. To help you get through the middle of the week, we have weekly positivity, which has become one of the more polarizing bits that we do, but to incentivize you to want to play along with some of our nonsense and just telling us something good that's going on with you right now. It could be sports related. It might not be. We got tickets to go see Godsmack in Charlotte in May. Win them before you can buy them. Three pairs of tickets we've got to give away right now. 336-777 1-600, but let's get the game started. Weekly positivity. Let's improve the vibes in the building. Oh, yeah. Rebellions are built on hope. 336-777-1600. Call us and tell us something good. whether you want to see Godsmack or not. Let's start with Wayne in Greensboro. Hi, Wayne. Wayne, tell me something good.
Josh, pitchers and catchers are reporting to spring training.
Oh, yeah.
That is just real good for
it's
baseball.
So good.
And opening day is right around the corner, and you just feel terrific today.
Oh, it just feels so good. And Wayno, you are an Astros fan, if memory serves.
Yes.
You went through years of bad baseball and tanking to see the highs of watching all of your teams play well now, or watch the Astros be one of the best teams. I'm an Orioles fan, and the guy who runs the Orioles, Mike Elias, came from the Astros, and we've been bad for years, only to last year start to be pretty good. This year, I think we're going to be really good. So I'm with you. That's exciting, Wayne.
I agree, Josh. The Orioles are looking up. I have one more thing that's very positive.
What's up?
It kind of got lost with all the Super Bowl hype, but the Astros hired a new GM. His name is Dana Brown. 33 years of scouting director for different clubs. And what makes this unique is he just happens to be black.
Oh,
and
wow.
They now have a black GM and a black manager on the field, and they're one of the few in professional sports, and that's a good thing.
It's a great thing, a good thing. Thanks for the call, Wayne. It's now getting to the point where that's not even a huge headline anymore. Two black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, black GM, black manager, and that's all very good. Wow. Kyle, the Amazon driver, are you wanting to go to Godsmack, or are you just wanting to tell us something good, or both, Kyle? Hey, Kyle, the Amazon driver. Are you there, Kyle? Hey, Kyle.
Godsmack.
Oh, there he is. Hey, Kyle, I couldn't hear you a second ago. Say whatever you just said again.
I do not want to go to Godsmack, but I do want to drop a little nugget here from life on the road. If you want to know the true nature of a person, see how they treat the people that they have no reason to treat well.
Absolutely.
And I say that because I got to meet Carolina great Jackie Manuel while I was on the road delivering the other day. And are you still there?
I'm still here. I'd love to hear what happened with Jackie Manuel.
Well, it's one of those deals where you don't really know how your heroes are going to take to somebody pointing them out and saying, hey, I know you, and I am a fan, because they could just brush you off. But let me tell you about this guy. He pulled me in, shook my hand, and I swear to you, Josh, he could have talked to me for another 20 minutes. It was just so authentic. He was so genuine, and it was really good to see him at that moment.
Yeah, Jackie, as soon as you started telling me that story, I knew how it was going to end, because Jackie's an all-time great dude. All-time.
Absolutely. I'm going to be, also, if I could get one more thing in here, I'm going to be...
I will never... There is no limit. The limit does not exist in terms of positivity in this segment, Kyle.
Don't tell me that. I will talk you to your next birthday, big dog. But no, I won't do that today. But I just wanted to let you know that you seem to be somewhat of a North Carolina history buff, are you not?
I am. I love North Carolina history. Last night I was at Duke, and the guy who runs the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame came up to me and said he's a big fan of the show. And we started talking about historical figures in sports, but fire off.
That's awesome. If you want to know a little bit about North Carolina history, I suggest, and this is not a plug, it's just because I am a fan of this, I'm going to be in the great city of Greensboro North Carolina this weekend on Saturday at the Greensboro Coliseum. And I will be attending the North Carolina Drag Racing Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah. That's dope. Oh, yeah. That's exciting stuff. Kyle?
Father's in that Hall of Fame. That's why it's such a great thing.
Kyle, the Amazon driver, I hope to see you when we're all in Greensboro next month.
Greensboro.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Kyle. Greensboro. Let's go to Rob in Winston-Salem. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Tell me something good with you.
Well, I'm hoping in a few minutes you're going to tell me I'm going to get two tickets to Godsmack.
I have some news for you right now.
Really?
I have some breaking news.
Yes, sir.
You've already earned those tickets to Godsmack.
Wow.
But, Rob, there is a requirement here. You got to tell me something good. Something good that happened to you today, Rob. Anything. Something that happened to you today that's good.
Well, I do have a cold, but my flow is good. Things are rolling well. Not a lot of stopped up. Everything is just moving right along.
That is very good.
Yeah, that's one thing. And let's see. Yesterday was Valentine's Day, and I had a strong flower game.
Wow. What did you get?
Exact right flower.
What'd you get?
I got a bouquet with tulips, some roses, some daisies, some daffodils, and just everything came together. And the fragrance in the house just added to the Valentine's vibe. Hit the filet mignon crab cake combo dinner just right on. It was right on target. Everything was good.
Wow. I'm just blown away by your flower game. That's incredible. Great stuff, Rob. And have fun at the Godsmack concert.
Thank you, sir.
Right.
I appreciate it.
Stay on the line. WD will get your information. I think we have time for one more. Ken is in High Point. Ken, tell me something good.
Hey, Josh, I got a couple of feel-good stories for you.
I love a good feel-good story.
Tubby Smith, you know who that is?
Oh, that's my guy.
Tubby was from Maryland and was going to go to college at Maryland, but when he went to meet Lefty Giselle, he hated him.
Mm-hmm.
So Gene Littles from High Point knew Tubby and talked him into coming to High Point, and he starred as a basketball player in High Point and High Point College, and he roomed with my brother. They were the first black and white roommates in the history of High Point College.
Wow. Tubby was the youngest of 16. He grew up on a farm. Apparently the nickname stuck because he was a big baby, and he always spent a lot of time in the tub. That was kind of the joke with Tubby Smith.
His mama put all of them in a big tub in the backyard and gave them baths. That's how Tubby came applied.
That's fantastic. Well,
and the other story.
Oh, you have another one. Yeah.
My next door neighbor in Jamestown back in the 80s was a scout for the Houston Astros. And somehow or another, he signed on with the Toronto Blue Jays. And when Bobby Cox was the manager of the Blue Jays, Bill was the first base coach.
That's incredible.
So Bill Smith.
I love stories like this. Ken, thank you so much for sharing them. That's Ken in High Point. Oh, we started with the Houston Astros, and we ended with the Houston Astros. And that's good. WD, I would ask what's good with you, but frankly,
we don't have time.
I don't have time to ask what's good with you. So that's been Weekly Positivity.
You're on the Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Before we talk baseball and answer unusual questions with Darren Bott, a reminder that The Drive is brought to you in part by our friends at Contour Brands, maker of Lee and Wrangler jeans. Obviously, you know Lee and Wrangler jeans, but did you know the They were created by the same company, Contour Brands, and that they have a home here in the state of North Carolina and specifically the Triad. They're looking for folks to start a new career today. So if that, you know, if you check that box of, hey, I'm looking for a new career, well, $15 an hour is where you would start with the potential to make a lot more than that. Make your new career be at Wrangler and Lee Jeans Contour Brands online, contourbrands.com. You can learn more about them to start your new career today. So something I learned today is that we're at that point where catchers and pitchers are reporting and college baseball starts a couple days from now. Darren Vaught loves baseball more than anybody I know. A lot of different titles I could attach to Darren, such as him being the lottery man. Being a professor now, Professor Vaught at UNC Chapel Hill. And there's a new one to add, ACC Baseball, Etc., a podcast co-hosted by Darren Vaught and, fair to say, Nickelback Danny Graves of the ACC Network. That is a Nickelback for sure. Wasn't he a Met?
Briefly, at the end of his career.
Yeah, he's probably known more for being on some of those Griffey Reds teams.
Yeah, he was the closer for the Reds teams. Started his career in Cleveland.
That's
where he came up. But
was he on that World Series team? Was he on the team that made it to the World Series? Do you know?
I don't know that.
We can find that.
Gone by then.
We can find that out on ACC Baseball, Etc., co-hosted by Darren Vaught and Danny Graves. We'll get to some unusual questions in a bit, but since college baseball is a couple days away, man, I'm excited. East Carolina looks really good again, and the team that's closest to where I sit right now is very good as well. How many teams in the state or really the nation for that matter, would you say are better than Wake Forest this year?
Well, D1 baseball's got them number 6 preseason ranking. That is tops of any ACC team. It's tops of any state of North Carolina team. They have the chance to be really good. They're loaded. They're deep. If you guys remember, they had the ACC Pitcher of the Year last season in Rhett Lauder. They've got a guy named Teddy McGraw who, with Lauder, gives them maybe the best rotation in college baseball. The expectations are going to be there for Wake Forest. To put it in context, the 5 in front of them, 4 of them are SEC schools. And we all know how the SEC is in baseball. There are not many. The short answer to your question, there are not many better set up to have success this year than Wake Forest.
It just means more in the SEC. I saw today, I want to make sure the sourcing is correct on it, but it seems that this is accurate, that the infamous Vanderbilt Whistler passed away at 69. That's something that
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that's a thing that's being reported at a couple different outlets ahead of that opener. It's something that people are circling around, but some are saying it's fake. So I want to make sure it's confirmed, but one television outlet put this out there that that's the case. Maybe we can see if I'm getting fooled by the internet. See, all these deep fakes, this is something that I see a lot in the last few weeks. I get fooled all the time now. Like, it kind of freaks me out, man. Like when Jimmy Kimmel did a thing where he was talking to 2001, 2002 Jimmy Kimmel on TV. Yeah, the AI stuff, it's really creeping me out. Like, where I get fooled all the time, Darren. All the time I get fooled. So I'm just spelling that out, that I also could be getting fooled by the internet.
And the blue checks are everywhere, right?
That makes sense.
You can't trust those.
So I am not killing the Vanderbilt Whistler. If he's still with us, I don't know if I'm happy. I mean, I don't want... You know, it's an annoying thing when you watch Vanderbilt baseball games. Here's what I know. We'll find out on Friday. We'll find out on Friday when Vanderbilt opens their season, if that's in fact the case. How about, rather than continuing down this awkward path, I transition to something a little bit better and more specifically, unusual questions.
Last week, guys, everybody made it out that I got mad at Josh and I left the press conference. That's not right. I thought it was an unusual question, and it's okay.
It's time for Unusual Questions with Josh Graham.
Somebody I trust says that the Vanderbilt Whistler is not, in fact, dead. You got fooled by the internet. I'm happy that the person's okay. Still annoyed by the Whistler himself during games. Is that okay to say?
On a human level, good. But I think it was probably wishful thinking by someone who had access to the internet.
There you go. Do you want to start us off with unusual questions?
I do. You mentioned it. Pitchers, catchers report today. It is oft heard on this day every year that guys are in the best shape of their life. When were you in the best shape of your life?
I'd probably say my senior year of high school, I was an excellent runner. And at one point I ran like a 5:45 mile my senior year of high school. Yeah. So I'd probably say that was me at my athletic peak, my physicality peak. But then again, I was 17 years old, so maybe something better happened after that. But my athletic prowess was not used that often in my college years. How would you answer that, WD?
I would say the most in shape I've ever been was probably 2021, around the pandemic. I'm not far from that now, but I made it a point to get really lean during that year.
How about you, Darren?
I go in stretches, waves, right? So it's certainly not right now, although I'm not in bad shape right now. I could maybe get away with reporting to spring training and saying it, that I was in the best shape of my life, right? It's close enough. But mid-20s, man, there was a wheelhouse, like mid to late 20s, 26 to 28. I was a machine. Like, I went to the gym every single day. I just, like, could eat whatever. There was a good stretch there. The metabolism treated me well.
Here's my unusual question. I was at Duke last night, and among the things I enjoyed about Coach K returning to Cameron was watching Mickey Krzyzewski pointing out to Coach K all the different chants and traditions they have during timeouts that he probably had not experienced before because, understandably, he was a little distracted. What do you think Coach K noticed for the first time last night that he had not in his 42 years coaching in that building as Duke's head coach?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, when we did K in the Crazies, he specifically said that he wouldn't notice things until he got home, right? So, like, he made reference to some of the things on the road that would get chanted or said to J.J. Redick that he didn't realize in the moment. And his family would clue him in on. So I think he's all of the usual stuff he's probably heard about.
I don't know. I saw Mickey like pointing out what they were about to do, the students, when they did the surfing Blue Devil. And Kay didn't seem that into it.
Who was the halftime? Was there any? I mean, I guess it's Cameron. There's not usually a halftime act.
He didn't stick around for halftime. He actually went into the Duke locker room. I saw him walk into the locker room.
Because that would be the first thing that jumps to my mind, right? He's not seen a halftime act.
Do you think Coach K has ever seen Red Panda?
There's no way he's ever, like, peeked outside of the locker room for that.
I know, but has he gone to an NBA game, seen one of his guys, and then Red Panda performs? It's a great question. This is what I want to know. If I ever run into K again, I ran into him last night, I'm going to ask him, you know who Red Panda is? You ever seen Red Panda? That's what I want to know from Coach K. Let's go to Dave and Clemens, who has an unusual question for us. 336-777-1600. Dave, go right ahead.
What's up, guys? Yeah, this is kind of Valentine's related. Scottie Pippen's ex-wife yesterday, Larsa Pippen, who is 48, put up an Instagram post claiming that she's dating Michael Jordan's son, who is 32, Marcus Jordan.
Oh.
How does this happen?
Okay. Oh, is there more to the question? Hold one sec. All right, sorry, we cut you off for a little bit. What's the rest of the question?
How does this happen, and how does Michael Jordan feel about this?
Okay.
This is his son, Marcus.
Yeah, well, there's a few things here. Scottie has, thank you for the call, has had some issues with Mike that have been documented over the last few years. Doesn't seem like they're close anymore. These things might not be unrelated. Also, you could be getting fooled by the internet like I was fooled that the Vanderbilt Whistler was dead.
Been confirmed. Right?
Okay, it's been confirmed, I guess. I saw Marcus Jordan play in college at UCF, which is an Adidas school. Everybody on the team was wearing Adidas except for Marcus Jordan, who was outfitted in Jordans, which
he had to
I
get
enjoyed.
Like,
and he had the glasses, the goggles.
There was like litigation about that. Like he had to get special permission in some pretty intense ways to do that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, as for how does this happen? I don't know. Love's blind, man. Love's blind. Also, I'm not trying to bleep up their summer that's coming up. Not trying to do that.
True.
WD,
true.
What's your unusual question?
What is your go-to board game?
This is a great question.
Scrabble. I wreck everyone in my path in Scrabble.
Not surprised.
Sarah Bradford beat me in Scrabble last year one time. Made me really upset when we were at the beach. Go-to board game? Are we counting card games?
Yeah, and anything like that.
Okay. Apples to Apples is a good one.
Yeah.
See, Cards Against Humanity is mixed. Got to be careful where who you pull that. I have Christian Cards Against Humanity, and I've got Cards Against Humanity. I got both. So that way, depending on the situation, you can figure out which one to pull out. You know, just trying to make
that's
sure.
Good awareness.
Yeah, especially if kids are around. You want to find something that's fun. And, yeah, apples to apples, though. That's usually the play for me. Do you have an answer to that?
See me in Uno.
See Uno's good. But do you play one of those special versions of Uno?
No.
I have radio friends in Raleigh that we hang out and they're like, oh, we're playing Uno. Oh,
no,
get ready. Playing Uno.
Just the regular version. This actually reminds me, we still need to crack open that Blockbuster game that I bought. Remember?
Yeah, you need to crack that thing open. You never brought it in.
We'll see about that then.
You never brought it in. Also, tomorrow you need to get yourself a cauliflower chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A.
That will be happening.
Yeah.
Me and B-Dot are going to have one.
B-Dot's going to be in studio. Do you know about this, Darren?
No. No. Cauliflower.
So there are three markets in America that Chick-fil-A is experimenting with starting this week with a cauliflower chicken sandwich: Charleston, South Carolina, Denver, and Greensboro. Those are the three places. So WD. It says he's excited about this. I'm not. Nobody else seems to be that I know. But WD's excited about it, so he's going to grab a couple of cauliflower chicken sandwiches. Here's the question I have, and I don't know if B-Dot's listening to this, so it might spoil the bit. Should we tell B-Dot it's a cauliflower sandwich?
Hold on. So the cauliflower is in place of the chicken?
Correct. It's a cauliflower chicken sandwich, I believe.
So it's supposed to be like a veggie option?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'd have that.
Should we tell B-Dot that it's not a regular? He'll wonder, why are you asking me to eat a chicken sandwich on air? I think we got to tell him. Hey, haven't you eat this? Why is WD eating this sandwich? And,
just eat it.
Eat it.
Yeah, I think the question's unavoidable. So, yes, you answered your own question. You got to tell him.
And that's been Unusual Questions for this week. Darren Vaught, make sure the first episode drops tomorrow, I believe. Yeah?
Correct.
And then weekly episodes to break down ACC baseball, which again starts this week. It is ACC baseball, etc. Danny Graves, Nickelback.
Look at this photograph.
Of the ACC Network. He was also an All-Star a couple of times with Darren Vaught. Have fun with that, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. In studio, I believe, next week.
Is that what's going on? High Points at home?
Yeah, High Points at home.
That is. I'll be in studio next week.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Thanks, buddy.
You got it.